Hey, hi everybody, and welcome again to one of those programs where we're dealing with identify as being. I'm not quite sure which program it is because it's a somewhat Neptunian subject, so I rely upon my guides, in this case, Michael Stacy and or Michael Crow to orient me as to what number this may be. Just wanted to, you know, this is an amazing picture of Vulcan. And I didn't want to switch to my own text before looking at this. It's a very kind of Nordic, Nordic mythological approach to Vulcan, and there is a Vulcan character in the mythology of a number of the countries. There certainly is in Finland, and I suppose it is so in the German myths. This has that kind of quality to it. It's in a way the very opposite of what we are doing, because this forges into form all kinds of ideas or thoughts which otherwise would remain on the subtle plane. So Vulcan produces a very bounded idea, a bounded example of within the Mahamaya. And we're looking a little bit more at the Neptunian approach, which is it's very different, and it correlates with boundlessness. And it appears in the very first fundamental of the secret doctrine, that there is a boundless, immutable principle. So, you know, this one looks like it's straight out of a out of a Wagnerian opera, but in fact our subject has quite a different approach, at least, and we may be able to indulge in it for a few minutes every day. You can't live that way in the Mahamaya. Not generally, not with the full realization of what's happening, but it's good to keep in mind and to keep in one's perceptions. Yeah, okay, I trust you've been able to hear me. I hope that's the case. I'm going to obviously begin here again with great invocation number two. No matter what we do, we either begin or end with great invocation number two these days, as the blatant, illegal underhandedness continues in ever more obvious ways to attempt to steal the election in America from the will of the people. So we're just teetering on the edge of dictatorship and fascism. And there's been, as some of you are probably aware, in Michigan, two people who wanted to disenfranchise all of Detroit with it's something 80% people of color. Their votes just wouldn't count. And the votes in the white suburbs would count. There was such a hue and a cry that the two people who were dividing the electoral board relented, and Michigan was certified for the blues. And then Donald Trump called the two recalcitrant electoral board supervisors, and suddenly they wanted to recant their earlier recantation. In other words, they said they were pressured into making that decision, and now again they wanted to go back to the decision in which they would disenfranchise all the millions of people in the Detroit area. I think, as much as I know about it, fortunately, they can't do that now. The deadline has been reached, apparently, but now the same type of ploy is being attempted in Wisconsin and, who knows, other members of the blue wall, so to speak, the former blue wall. I think lawsuits are being denied. They are being almost comically represented by a lawyer who seems to have lost his mind and his appropriateness. In other words, there's a reason for us to continue with our work to sustain legality and proper protocols in this post-election period, where the occupant of the White House continues to say it would be foolish to bet against me. So there are many other things that that might be done to upset and throw into chaos this post-election period prior to the inauguration. In other words, our work is needed. And we continue, even though our subject tonight is, you know, it's out of the world of Mahamaya, and all of this is very much in the world of Mahamaya. Nevertheless, we have to live consciously in two ways simultaneously. We have to live within the world of relativity and also be aware somehow of the world of non-relativity. And that's, you know, our subject pretty much during these Identify as Being sessions. So now, great invocation number two, and we apply it as we will, according to the present circumstances which threaten the growth of the hierarchical type of government that is democracy, not just in the United States, but all over the world. If the United States falls into blatant fascism, it will be a huge challenge to democracy in governments all over the world. Let the lords of liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. Let the rider from the secret place come forth, and coming save. Come forth, O Mighty One. Let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with massed intent. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O Mighty One. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O Mighty One. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O Mighty One, and blend these three. Construct a great defending wall. The rule of evil now must end. Well, all of this used 80 years ago, really, you know, at a critical moment in the Second World War, has applicability again, because these forces of obstruction are really relentless. And until they're soundly and thoroughly and completely beaten, and perhaps that will not be final until the judgment day, which is still a long way ahead, they will continue to mount their attacks against the aspirants and disciples and initiates and even against the masters themselves. I may have quoted once from Master Moria, where he says, you trouble yourself about a few minor demons when the daggers of Satan are aimed at our backs. And he was speaking about the war which goes on in Shambhala and the attacks, the kind of attacks which only Shambhala can handle. It'll be a long time before we have to face that kind of onslaught, but we do not underestimate the second attack when so much damage is done. I just want to, I'm glad you're here, just want to welcome you. Of course, Michael and Tuya keeping us in good order, and welcome Anna and Anne and Annette and Astra and Aurea, Catherine, Frederick, Heike, Isabel, Jesse, and Joe Waltz, one of our communications group, Joan, Leslie, Lori, and let me just see. It's not as easy to do this. Margot, Martine, and Miro, Nathalie, Nessa, and Risto, and Tia. Yeah, welcome to you, and thank you for being here. And other people, of course, you know, they may join up as we go along or leave, join, leave. But I only have opportunity to do this once. In the chat box should be the link for our USA vigil, which we've been conducting every night. I think Tuya will be doing that tonight. Thank goodness. I got myself into a lot of trouble yesterday trying to do it. But you'll have a more normal USA vigil today, I think. And you know the reason for it. We stay alert. And we put our energy esoterically into the emergence of the good, the beautiful, and the true. In short, the will to good. In short, the divine plan. Now, let's see here. All right. There is just a number of places to begin. I hope to have this book ready, Seeds of the Infinite, before too long. It's a bit of a out of control process, keeps on growing, you know. But what I've been tending to do, and you know, you're familiar with it now, is offer a kind of reflective lecture, meaning that it's not quite a lecture, and it's not simply a straight meditation. It's a slow-moving lecture which has meditative aspects to it. And I have found that that may be the best way to proceed. There's a lot of things written in here that I can't get into, but maybe some thoughts, some ideas, impress us and will be of value as we try to find at least a few minutes each day to think of these deep matters. I'll be right there. So let's align. And we at least imagine that the Antikarana is somewhat built in our case, and a kind of group Antikarana also. And we hope to achieve at least something of the perspective of the soul, and really to fulfill our objective, something of the perspective of the spiritual triad. The abstract mind, the intuition or transcendental mind, and the spiritual will. And maybe now and then some flash from that high point, that highest point of tension that the normal human being experiences, which is the monad. We cannot call the Christ and the Buddha anymore the normal human beings. They are members of the fourth creative hierarchy, or the ninth, and they already have some growing access to the cosmic astral plane. And they are residents of the council. That's not, you know, normal when you think of what we are. So basically our purpose in these kinds of reflections is to stretch and etherealize our self-concept. We usually think we are something, this or that, but we change what we think. And we stretch our self-concept into a boundaryless state. And we also compress it until we become that ever lessening, that ever lessening factor in universe, which we call the absolute infinitesimal. If we thought we had some kind of form, some kind of boundedness, we discover that we are becoming less and less but never become nothing. We will become what we are, the no thing, but not nothing. And that's a distinction to ponder. So the real you, the real me, we just are not what we customarily think we are when we live our personality life, even our soul life. That self-concept grows and grows as we, you know, become more mature in years, but it's not the reality. So all true seekers after the self, as Yogananda would call it, the self-realization pursued by his fellowship, all real estimations of the self are not the customary ones. And we want to be able to switch into something truer about our identity and not kind of what you see is what you get. The lower ego, even the ego of the egoic lotus or the capital E ego of the triad, well, even the all caps ego, we might say, of the monad, these are not the absolute reality of what we are. So it requires something, some deeper search. And really, what we're doing here is we're having a change of identity. Not just words, but a perceived, or maybe more accurately, an infused change of identity. Now, if we're going to merge with other beings and recognize in the merging that we are those other beings, we need to experience along these lines. Going to when you look at this diagram, there appears to be a lot of diversity, and you know, you end up saying to yourself, well, finally, if this descent continues long enough, that I've got to be one of those little circles. But there's not only diversity here, there is commonality. And there's a lot of merging. And how is it that you can be a little circle, a little emanation, and merge with other such emanations so that you actually become them and they become you? So that's quite a mystery, really. And on the evolutionary arc, or the path, I call it, of monadic retraction, that's what happens. So do you think then that you lose your individual identity, or that you actually find your identity increasingly? And as stated, the heart is required, not the shifting eye, which sequentially moves from one thing to another. Rather, stillness in the heart begins to reveal the identicality of that with which we merge. And all of this is really beyond good and evil. And so we are on that path wherein the many, whereupon the many become the one, that they have always been. So we begin to detect something else, not what form tells us about, but something else, which of course really is not something else. There is no something else, finally, in reality. In reality, you can't use a preposition really, but in the state of the real, there's nothing else. But in the state of Mahamaya, the real begins to look like something else, which it isn't, really. So it's a very subtle quest that is undertaken by a limited consciousness we call an emanation. We would be amazed if we see how much in Buddhist art this emanation dynamic is featured. And the why of it all, well, last week we read about the problem of evil, and we saw that it was a question of limitation. But why the self-limitation? Ultimately, the whole thing becomes very mysterious because the transcendental deity, transuniversal deity, whose self-reflection is absolute infinitude in an articulated state, cannot be improved. There is no improvement in reality. And the absoluteness itself is utterly non-improvable. The arithmetic operations do not apply. You cannot add to it. You cannot subtract from it. You cannot multiply it. You cannot divide it in reality. So there is no improvement in our essential reality, but there is constant opportunity for improvement within our Mahamayavic actuality and forever, cyclically. Improvement in that state is a return to archetypalization. So it's a paradox. We strive for improvement, for a greater share of cosmos, and yet the very essence of what is striving is non-improvable. So these are not necessarily thoughts for everyone, because they won't make sense to so many people, but maybe they begin to make sense to us. And it really begins to make sense to us when the presence becomes present. This last line holds it. We live so often in an absence of the presence. It seems like one is playing with words, but not really. We live so often in a state of consciousness which is an absence of the presence. And even within the universe, I'm not talking super universally at all times, because we are so immersed in form that it blots out the presence. And yet in Rule 9, we are told to achieve that state, hiding all difference, blotting out all form. Now, when form is blotted out, it's not that everything in front of your eyes or everything perceived suddenly disappears. It is still registered. But the heart, or maybe the hearts, are so energized that the presence appears in the midst of diversity, and the presence is realized as that diversity. So nothing has its, in this case, nothing has its own being. There is no ultimate individuality, which is like saying there is no ultimate divisibility. It all arises from the presence, and infusception will reveal that. And that presence is you, is I, that presence. And then we can say that if all things arise from the presence, all things arise from me. Or rather, from my own self-perception. If I am not just a tiny emanation, but I am finally the unveiled universal logos. So a big task is to remove the boundaries, the veils. So I know what I am. I know I am the presence, and I know that all perceptions are self-perceptions. All things are self-perceptions arising from me. Not is, but me, says the ancient mantra. And if you think carefully, you will see how the old phrase can be extended. Be still and know that I am God. in the state of the non-movement of consciousness. The I am God realization. Comes into focus. And so finally, there's nothing and no one that you do not include in your being, as your being, whether good, evil, beautiful, ugly, whatever, all arose from you. And there's no distinction between the different yous. All yous are one you. So no matter what you see, no matter what you register, in your normal sensory apparatus or super sensory apparatus, it's all you. Not just platitudinously, because you can say anything. And it doesn't mean anything. But really, and I'll just close with the idea that we are searching for non-formal perception. Which is infusception. We don't want to get caught in form, thinking that the form is reality. It is actuality in relativity. That's what form is. But not reality. We are looking for something that has no parts, everything other than this does have parts, apparently, and does have boundaries, apparently. So all the many, 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 uncountable, really, things, perceptions in absolute infinitude have parts, boundaries, distinction, articulation. But not you know, that, this, this, that, that, this, but really and finally, I would say we are skimming being off the perceptual impressions of form. We are skimming being off the perceptual impressions of form. It is so thin that it has no dimension. Has no dimension. I'm not doing too well here. But I'm trying. Anyway, this is as far as we'll go now. Obviously, we're going to use relativistic language. That's all we've got. At the moment. But we'll use relativistic language in such a way that it points towards non-relativity, non-relativity. It points towards that which it cannot itself embrace. It can only indicate. And so, as I say, a little bit every day, even if it's just 5 minutes in relative time, we just can give that kind of time and it will be a benefit to our overall experience of the world and of reality. That's what we can do. Even just a very short time, it's the seed of what the greater beings know and know better and know better and know better. It's the seed of ever heightening points of tension which reveal isness, presence, and our real self. Not just our mahamayavically imaginary self. So, going to make sure that we do stop quite close to 7:30 GMT, because at 8 GMT we have our vigil meditation for the USA, you know, and, you know, the 2025 group, 2025 initiative, has ongoing daily vigils in which quite a few people are participating, and ours is focused on bringing the election through the troubled waters of selfishness and egotism until the will of the people, albeit, you know, in the relative world, is achieved. So we have to make sure that we can begin on time, and that tends to cut a little bit short these programs, but not too short. So if you have any thoughts or questions here, statements you'd like to make, either verbally or written, then okay. This is the time to do it.
And Michael.
Yep.
Jesse has written a couple of comments. First, we are becoming boundlessness itself.
Okay, and let me respond to that, that is a truth in consciousness. And when it comes to the a still deeper level of truth, we are becoming what we already are. So the emanation perceives the becoming of boundlessness, but the reality, which is at the heart of the emanation, is forever boundlessness. So in a way, both are true. Okay, that's one.
And that was followed with, becoming equals coming to the understanding of, and then we know we are it.
Yeah,
finally, yeah. We are it.
Yeah, so basically you're saying the same thing that I'm saying. And, you know, perception is not necessarily an act of understanding. But infuception, in which you substand everything because you pervade everything, that is much closer to understanding or throughstanding or pervasive, standing, all-pervading standing in spiritual being. So, you know, you can perceive many things, but you just don't know the meaning of them. You know, it takes, early man saw through the eye or touched or heard many things, but they were not correlated. They were not understood. And eventually, through the use of the mind, more understanding came in the mental sense, and eventually identification with that which was registered came. And people like ourselves are moving into that stage. It sometimes is said to occur, you know, around the second initiation and leading up to the third initiation. It exists as a growing pervasion, a growing identification, a growing understanding or thorough standing within. So yes, we're on our way to re-realize, as we have forever, what we are. Thank you.
And Anne has shared, tying this subject to the current election crisis, one might be able to say that it is the lack of recognition of the quality of being, or just even unity of being one, is the crux of the current frustration among the people of the US, the frustration of the blue side with the red.
Yeah. It's a deep thing to be so divided by contrary directions, one very encapsulated and rather materialistic, and even the spirituality associated with it is materialistic. You know, there's that book, Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism. So many of the heavens that people have conceived in various religions are materialistic heavens. So there's a lot of materialism in this, in relation to Mars and that type of red, whether it's apparently on the Earth and on the dense plane or on the subtle levels. The other group is more inclusive and sacred, just the way Jupiter is a sacred planet, and in a way subsumes Mars. But for the moment, there is conflict there. And if the blue is allowed to grow, I sometimes visualize the whole of the United States covered in this beautiful, radiating this beautiful color of indigo, which is the great synthetic color, you know, and all the other colors are subsumed within it, even that Martian red. And but in Letters on Occult Meditation, he deals with this, but there it is, the great indigo that will bring unity first. It will bridge the cleavages that occur because of a very potentially destructive astrological condition of Mars in Gemini. I mean, you know, this is why there's been so much violence in, you know, in post offices, and you know, in the media. It's a mental type of violence. Mars is causing warfare between the two sides, which should be communicating in unity and synthesis. So that has to be overcome. Obviously, if we had Jupiter in Gemini, it would be a much stronger second ray indication and would assist the soul to express. But as I say, you know, to visualize the nation radiating the synthetic ray of indigo blue, I think can be very helpful. And eventually this friction, this frustration, this inability to speak to each other except in violent ways, it will inevitably be overcome, because the soul finally, the angel of the presence finally, will be stronger than the dweller on the threshold. Thank you, Anne.
And while you were talking about the indigo, Jesse was putting in the chat box. And then finally the red and blue merge and we become the indigo. And she adds, but indigo contains more blue than red.
Yes, the more we identify with the soul nature and find ourselves as spiritual citizens of a country that has a Retu soul, the more the dominating color will be indigo. And indeed, the blue is the basic color with indigo. So, you know, sometimes we can use color techniques. We can use tonal techniques. Now, when using the color indigo, it's possible to sound the note A. First of all, in the sequence of the spectrum, we reach indigo at following a type of blue and preceding a type of violet, and it finds itself correlated with the note A, which is in one way the beginning of a scale which fits with something DK said about G being a seventh ray note, not just a second ray note. It all depends where you begin the scale. But the note A, interestingly, is the note, although there is no absolutely established frequency, the note to which orchestras attune. It can be very, very rapid, like the Japanese orchestras, maybe something like 447 vibrations per second. Or it can be more like the A in Bach's time, which was down in the teens of the 400s. And different A's are chosen. But interestingly, exactitude of frequency is what is required. And the esoteric color of the note A is indigo. So this links the synthetic second ray indigo with the esoteric fifth ray indigo, shows the connection of those two rays via the same color. So, you know, we'll be able to use certain forms, certain notes, certain colors, certain rhythms, certain words to achieve results which would seem to us now truly magical. And even so magical as to be, you know, disruptive if in the wrong hands or, you know, enunciated by the improperly motivated human beings. And all of that's coming in a kind of a combination of the fourth and fifth ray in the future. Austria, the home of so many excellent musicians, has a fourth ray soul and fifth ray personality. Tibetan gives that to us. And Germany has the fourth ray soul, and I do believe very much the fifth ray mind. I think from those two countries, a lot will emerge along specifying exactitude of frequency upon which we can have the kind of accuracy we need to really evoke responses that are from higher points of tension. Yeah, 447. Yeah, that's right. 447 is what the Japanese orchestras tune to. Now, American orchestras, they tune to A440, pretty much. Yeah. And the word hertz means cycles per second, HC. Thank you, Jesse.
There are no other written comments at this point, and no hands raised.
I think that we have to live two lives in living one life. We have some paradoxes to resolve. We can do things in the world of relativity, in the Mahamayavic world of relationship, that make the realization of non-relationship more possible to us. So, you know, we have to be, as occultists in training, spiritual occultists in training, we have to be very careful. And maybe that's why the fourth ray is called fourth ray, even though the fifth ray gives us the mathematical type. The fourth ray, which acutely depends upon frequencies for the establishment of harmony, is called the ray of mathematical exactitude. Now, you would think that would be the fifth ray, but this is what the Tibetan tells us. And nothing is more delicate than the achievement of harmony through the proper frequency. All of this is part of the kind of magical science of the coming age, whereby energies at much higher points of tension than we usually live can be invoked and thus evoked in response and made present to our consciousness. In other words, we can begin to really have the pervasion of what the higher points of tension reveal right here in the area where we usually live, which usually is the dense physical body of the planetary logos or of the solar logos. We can transform this cosmically unprincipled area by accessing these higher points of tension in a very meticulous and scientifically accurate manner. And then that will really lead to the redemption of that which we have inherited from the moonshine and from the previous major solar system. When you read Letters on Occult Meditation, and by the way, you know, I've made now about 50 programs, 49, 50 programs on Letters on Occult Meditation. I'm almost to page 250, which means there's about 100 pages left. You'll find it to be a great book. It is an extraordinary book, very, I find it to be a difficult book, even though it is written early on, but it's very technical. But you will find it gives you a wonderful foundation as to what meditation really is and what can be accomplished through meditation, and then it serves as an incentive for us to learn how to meditate in a more efficient and deep manner. So, you know, those things are posted on Makara, and you can listen to them in the car, and or you can put them on your phone, or you can, if you have time, you know, sit down with them, because when you sometimes see the words and hear the words at the same time, it makes for a more impressive impact of what Master DK is trying to convey. I think you will find that there's a lot of, so far, a lot of commentaries on Makara, which are video commentaries, and also some written commentaries, and there's more to come. It's like having a class where we all think together, paragraph by paragraph, line by line, word by word, and we see through very careful reading what each word may connect with out there in that universe of knowledge. So if you want to take advantage of what is offered to you on Makara, you can do that. And I would say we should. We've got 4.5 years left before the Great Conclave. And as I've often said, it is a time of assimilation of phase two of the great teaching that Master DK has given in preparation for the impartation of phase three. So if we can use, you know, we have a lot of things to do. We're very busy people, and there's a lot of social, political, religious crisis going on around us. But if we can spend some time to assimilate more and more of what Master DK has given already, we will be well served in the long run. So that's my plug for, you know, getting with the assimilation work. Okay, friends, well, that's maybe all we have to think about right now. And we will get into that practical work in the realm of relativity in another 45 minutes or a little less. And the Zoom connection is given here by Michael in the chat box, right up at the top. And you can join us if you want to be part of that daily vigil that we're conducting in order to make the post-election period less chaotic and less theft-oriented. And trying to preserve the will of the people and not see them disenfranchised. So I think, Michael, if there's no more words, and thank you all, we're going to close with the great invocation. And all I have to do is find it. And there it is. And this, you know, this will be on our colleague BL in the communications group has been putting up a lot of these programs. And then there are the broadcasts, and they have been also in process of being put up on Makara and also on the YouTube channels. So, you know, everything is accessible. And you have the material you need to go ahead further. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, everybody, and lots of love and many blessings from the entire communications group. I'll stop the recording and Michael will turn off the program and we'll get this to you, make it made available as soon as may be possible. Bye-bye.